Chapter 1. I never dreamed I'd come back. I shouldn't have. Even though I told myself things were safer compared to when I'd passed through all those years ago, deep down, I knew I was only kidding myself. The deepening shadows brought scant relief from the blistering heat, although the lower the sun dipped on the horizon, the more bearable it became. The sun set early in this part of the world. I took a deep drink from my water bottle and wiped the sweat from my face with the back of my hand, and waited. I changed my hair for the umpteenth time and wore brown-tinted contacts so I'd blend, but there's only so much a girl can do to change her appearance short of surgery. Thanks to Quinn and his lies, the men who had tried to kill me thought I was dead. For now. The ruse wouldn't last long. Not if someone from the old days got curious about the new American woman in town. No sense lingering longer than I had to. Find the stash if it was still there, then get the hell out of Mexico. The tiny house on the even smaller lot looked like the owner had lost interest and decided to let nature take its course. Dirt green vines strangled the walls as if they were trying to squeeze the last drop of moisture from the filthy stucco. The cracked and faded flower pots flanking the walkway grew dirt in profusion, their long dead occupants a distant memory. Two lime trees in the side yard still shaded my target. The ground looked like it hadn't been disturbed in all the time I'd been gone, if my luck held. I'd spent the day and evening before casing the place, watching for signs of life. The house appeared abandoned. How much longer could I stay without arousing suspicion? More time than absolutely necessary in Los Otros made me nervous, and I itched to get the deed done. My stomach growled as I walked back to the rental. With a loan from Lewis, my contact in the Drug Enforcement Administration, I'd chosen an unassuming Nissan Versa with plenty of dings and scratches. I told him I needed to find someone before going back to the States, now that Roberto Salazar was dead. At first, Lewis had argued, asking why I'd even consider staying in Mexico, but finally relented when I told him I owed my life to this person. Nothing he said would change my mind. Memories of the old man who'd saved me from being gunned down in the street 11 years before flooded my mind. Augie. Vincent Anaya's right-hand guy, Frank Lanzarotti, put a bullet in him as we left Augie's house. I'd never forgiven him, and felt grim satisfaction when Frank had been shot. This final trip through cartel country wasn't only about the money. I got in the car and turned on the air while I ate the now-cold tamale I'd bought earlier. I could have gone back into town and gotten something else, but wanted to keep my visibility to a minimum. Old friends would not be a welcome diversion, and I'd already risked discovery by staying the previous evening at a nearby hotel. Hours later, after I'd moved the car twice and taken a fitful nap, I parked in the dirt track alley behind the house and cut the lights. From behind, the abandoned house took on a miserable, thoroughly depressive mien. I could almost make out the dark windows and back door, all three of which appeared as though they hadn't been seen to in years. The backyard where Lana served me dinner so many lives ago was grown over with tenacious vegetation, the kind that could survive drought-ridden, remorseless summers. What had finally prompted Lana to leave? I tried to imagine her happy, dragging her sadness and the fallout from the choices she'd made to wherever the wave of her life deposited her. All that came to mind were bottles of cheap tequila on a beat-up nightstand and dark, lonely sojourns with men who didn't care. Bad choices put me in this backyard of a tiny, run-down two-bedroom casa at the end of an unpaved street in a one-horse Mexican town. I hoped this wasn't another of those. Bad choices, I mean. I popped the trunk and walked around to grab the pickaxe and shovel I'd purchased the day before, along with a large backpack. My idea was to work as quickly as possible until I'd unearthed the stash of gallon-sized plastic bags, backfill the hole, and leave. I glanced through the rear window at the glowing clock on the dash. 3:15. The post office wouldn't be open for hours. I'd have a long wait. I walked along the back of the house to the side yard, picking my way past rampant prickly pear and creosote, and paused in the shadows to listen. The wind slid past me, circling my bare legs, churning the dirt at my feet into a dust devil that swirled and crested, and then disintegrated into the night. The breathy hoo of an owl nearby assured me I wouldn't work alone. The three other homes on the street remained dark, signifying no one on the block suffered from insomnia. At least not tonight. The houses were far enough apart and on the opposite side of the unlit street from where I'd be working, so it was reasonable to assume my efforts would go unnoticed. One of the three boasted a noisy swamp cooler that clanked in protest at the stifling night air, helping to further disguise my activities. I proceeded to the lime trees and leaned the shovel against the house. The new pickaxe broke through the caliche easier than I remembered, and soon the earth resembled a miniature plowed field. Afraid I'd damage the plastic bags or wake up light-sleeping neighbors, I reined in my enthusiasm a few inches deep and switched to the spade. Though not as noisy, the shovel took much longer to dig the remaining depth of the hole. About an hour later, when I still hadn't hit what I was looking for, worry crept in like a feral cat scrounging for food. What if it's not here? What if Lana somehow found it, dug it up, and is now living large somewhere in South America? Well, then I'd have to figure out something else. If it was gone, I'd be shit out of luck. I straightened and took a deep breath, collecting my thoughts. Panicked and wired from dodging death that night so long ago, I thought I'd be back to retrieve the stash long before now. A faulty memory could be the reason I hadn't found it yet. Or Lana was dancing the tango in Argentina. Discarding the tango possibility, I stepped past the freshly dug hole to survey the yard. Closing my eyes, I thought back to that night, the memories resurrecting long-buried emotions. So many years of running, of looking over my shoulder, never being able to live a normal life. So many friends lost. Fallout from a bad choice made long ago. Payback, I supposed, for being stupid and young and attracted to shiny things. My fingers curled around the onyx jaguar figurine I wore around my neck. Now that Salazar was dead, I hoped my life could get more or less back to normal. Then again, what the hell was normal? I opened my eyes and took in the lime trees, the house, the surrounding vegetation. The yard had looked different back then, well tended. Then it hit me. Unchecked catclaw choked the tree trunks, creating an optical illusion. I'd misjudged the distance of the stash from the base of the tree and had dug too far out. Once again working the pickaxe, I hacked away with new purpose at the base of the overgrown shrub until I cleared a space where I gauged the target should be. Rinse, repeat, switch to the shovel. Focused on digging, I didn't realize I had company until it was too late.
"Hey," a voice demanded in slurred Spanish. "What are you doing?"
The rank smell of cheap tequila accompanied the words. Slowly, I turned. His features semi-distinct in the darkness, the man swayed on his feet, his thick torso and muscled arms reminiscent of a man who worked long hours lifting heavy things. I gave him a half-smile and tightened my grip on the shovel. "My friend Lana asked me to stop by her house and pick something up for her. I noticed the vines were choking the tree." I glanced over my shoulder at the offending catclaw. "She'd be very upset if one of her trees died. So I thought I'd clear some of it away before I left." Not a great story, but the man was obviously drunk, so I didn't think I'd have to be too convincing. With a puzzled expression, he swiveled unsteadily on his feet, glancing first down one side of the street and then back the other way before returning his bleary gaze to me and the shovel. His expression morphed from perplexed to concerned, transitioning to a leer.
"You're a liar," he slurred as he lurched toward me. "No one lives here."
He took another step closer.
"You do something nice for me, and this'll be just our little secret, just,"
he stage whispered, reaching for his fly. I hoisted the shovel over my head. I couldn't afford to wake the neighbors. "One more step and you're going to have one hell of a headache come morning," I said, my voice low.
"Huh?"
He gaped at the shovel in my hands, incomprehension clouding his face. Frowning, he wiped his hands down the front of his shirt, his confusion obvious. He closed his eyes for a moment,
but lost his balance and stumbled to one side, barely catching himself before taking a header onto the street.
"Ay, caramba,"
he muttered, shaking his head. Obviously unhappy with the way things were turning out, he waved me away, mumbling incoherently to himself as he zigzagged a path down the street. I lowered the shovel with a sigh. I'd have to work faster, in case he came to his senses and raised an alarm. 45 minutes later, the muted clang of metal against dirt changed to a dull thud. I cut in around the spot with the edge of the shovel and then scooped out the rest by hand, revealing a dirt-encrusted bundle. My heart beat faster as I slid the tip of the shovel underneath the plastic bag and pushed down on the handle, leveraging the first package out of its resting place. 8 gallon-sized bags later, I stopped to take a breath. I leaned the shovel against the tree and knelt down. The outer bags had become stiff from the dry and the dirt and the heat, but remained intact. I grabbed one and opened it, removing the inner bag, which was surprisingly flexible. I flashed on how long it would take for plastic to degrade when it wasn't subjected to light, like in a landfill. Our civilization would be long gone before that ever happened. For now, I had immense gratitude for the durability of plastic. I slid open the plastic zipper holding the bag closed and reached inside for a stack of bills. Money in hand, I flipped through the hundreds with my fingers, fanning my face. Still there. Still intact. Yes. Once all 8 bags were safely inside the backpack, I zipped it closed and stood, kicking some of the dirt back into the hole to make it look less obvious. Since the house had evidently been abandoned and my visitor had been quite drunk, I doubted anyone would take notice, at least long enough for me to disappear. I picked up my tools and the hefty pack and returned to the car, my heart light. With Salazar dead, even if the home had been on a cartel watch list, it wouldn't be now. They were tenacious, yes, but that would be too obsessive, even for cartel thugs. Besides, they thought I was dead. I threw everything in the trunk and climbed into the driver's seat. One more errand and I'd be long gone. Goodbye, Mexico. Hello, freedom.